Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to tell you real quickly before we get to Logan Paulson about Foley Mechanical. So we had some HVAC system issues recently, and we called Foley Mechanical. Dan Foley himself came out and dealt with us directly, which, believe me, he and the fact that he did that was impressive to both my wife and to me. Dan owns 100% of the company. It's not a franchise. It's not some big private equity firm. He controls the quality from the equipment to the people he hires. His team, professional, skilled, sharp. They were great. Foley Mechanical is a full-service heating, air conditioning, hot water, and boilers. They do it all, and they're the go-to for older homes with radiator heat, a real specialty. They work across D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, and they proudly install a Manna HVAC equipment. If your system needs help like ours did, or you just want it done right, call Foley Mechanical or go to foleymechanical.com and tell Dan that I sent you. All right, Logan Paulson and I had a conversation, which I recorded yesterday for today's show. I just started off by asking him, when they turn on the film of the game Monday night, what will Dan Quinn and his coaching staff see?
Well, I think the thing about this game is that you don't need to be like a ball knower, quote unquote, to kind of understand where the deficiencies were, right? Obviously, you got to protect the football, got to tackle better, got to play assignment sound, run defense. And I think that's it. And I think, you know, when you talk about some of the issues that have maybe plagued the team over the last couple of weeks, you know, like, you know, don't wear capes was something Joe Wood Jr. said a couple of days ago, right? And that, I think, applied very specifically to the pass game. And then last night, I felt like it applied to the run game, right? And then, obviously, I think on the whole, the team tackled relatively well, but then there's that big missed tackle that Quan has. Didn't turn the football over, even though there was two opportunities to do it. And then the Washington Commanders offense, tough interception in the red zone, ball out with Bill in a short field, and then obviously the fumble to end the game. So it's just everything that kind of those high-level platitudes that we in this on this side of the analyst community talk about, you know, where it's like protect the football, tackle, play fundamentals, and like you win the game. Like that's kind of what it feels like here.
I think we all know, you know, as NFL fans and you as a former player, that these games are really like their own entities. You know, it's week to week. This is the nature of the league, and what you see one week isn't always what you see the next. But now that we're 6 weeks into the season, there is something that concerns me as a takeaway from last night and really all six games. Is there anything that you can kind of grab a hold of right now and say, this is a problem if they don't fix it?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the highest level, it's just a general consistency, right? Like, you know how they say, like, good teams don't beat themselves? A lot of times they're just talking about consistent football, right? They don't turn the football over. They don't give up explosive plays. And there were points last year where I thought that the offense was incredibly consistent, just, you know, executing on third down, executing on first down at every kind of turn. And they haven't kind of reached that same level of offensive consistency yet. Now, they've been very, very good, don't get me wrong, but they're lacking kind of that next step ability that they showed last year. And defensively, I think they've, again, shown flashes. I think the addition of Kinlaw, Payne on the interior has been outstanding. I think Dorrance Armstrong has been a revelation in terms of his sack production. But they seemingly, in those big moments, for 60 minutes, they can't always get it done. So if you're looking for, in my opinion, the thing that separates them from like a good to a great team It's the lack of consistency. And again, a lot of that, I think, can be explained with some of the injury situations, guys stepping into new roles. But it's something that I think needs to improve over the next couple of weeks if they want to get to, you know, the dance at the end of the year.
I want to get more specific on last night's game. But for me, the thing that I think I got most frustrated about last night, and I think it's a larger concern season-wise, is I think we're watching for a second straight year a defense that just isn't very good. The results that were positive came against Russell Wilson's Giants, Geno Smith's Raiders, and an absolutely decimated offensive line against the Chargers, against Green Bay, Atlanta, and then really a Chicago team that's not great offensively. It's been problematic. And last night was the first time that they got shredded in a way in which they got shredded a lot last year, which was on the ground. But they've continued to have coverage issues. And if they're not getting a pass rush, that's going to be a big issue. And I'm wondering if you feel the same way. Like, I'm looking at, you know, the Cowboys, Chiefs, Seahawks, and Lions in the next four. Last year when they were bad on defense, you got Jake Haener in New Orleans. You got, you know, Andy Dalton. You got Cooper Rush. You got, you know, everything kind of broke in the right way for them. I'm concerned that the defense is bad again. You say what?
I think that's a really interesting perspective, and I think it's important just to remember, and you know this, but like that defensive production is directly correlated to the level of quarterback or opponent, right? So strength of schedule is almost a better indicator in terms of defensive production year on year than the actual personnel on the field. Now, that being said, that doesn't quell any of your concerns because the strength of schedule this year is better. I will say that I have been pleasantly surprised with some areas. And they've kind of taken turns being surprising, if that makes sense. So, like,
yeah,
the defensive line the past couple of weeks has been impressive. I think there's times where the coverage in the back end looks good, which gives me some level of optimism that they'll be able to figure it out and kind of get it to gel as long as they're on the same page and communicating well. So I do think they're talented enough in the back end, but they haven't had that talent in the back end line up necessarily with the talent in the front, and it's kind of been defensive line carrying, secondary carrying, and I'm hoping that, again, as they move into season, they spend more time together, guys are getting healthier, that they have an opportunity to kind of say, maybe we're not a top 10 defense in the NFL, but maybe we can be a top, you know, 15, 16, 17 defense in the NFL. And with the offense producing and being as productive as they've been, that should be fine. Now, like, that I think is going to be a big step compared to last year, given the strength of schedule, but I do think they've gotten better in enough spots where it's a possibility. Maybe not a likelihood, but it is definitely a possibility.
You know, one of the things I'm just starting to wonder is I do think they've got good players. Like you said, like I'm like, Kinlaw's been a really good addition. I mean, through six games, I see the difference he's making in the interior of that defensive line. He's better than John Allen was last year, in my opinion. Armstrong's, you know, he got it going at the end of last year and through the postseason, and that's continued this year. I still think Frankie Louvu is a real talent. I think Trey Amos looks the part. He's young. It's a position that sometimes needs experience, but I think he looks the part. And so why, you know, against the decent teams they've faced offensively, have they struggled and only feasted on kind of the bad teams? And I put the Chargers into that category just on that day because they were a mess coming into that game on the offensive line, and it got even messier last Sunday when they played them. And it leads people like me to ask the question, is it more personnel or is it more coaching scheme play calling? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good question. I think it's probably a combination of both. Like, there are times in the game last night, just because it's fresh in my mind, where, you know, they're running kind of a outside zone Wanda to the left, and there's one of the players gets their head out of the gap and isn't, you know, they're in a seven-man front versus a six-man blocking surface. Like, it's very clear, at least to me on film, like, who should be fitting where, and all of a sudden one player doesn't fit there, and then it's a 10-yard game, right? We've got a toss crack to the perimeter. And so to me, in that example, the scheme is correct, but the player is kind of letting you down. He's not doing what he's supposed to do, right?
Yep.
And then there's other examples where I'm saying, like, what the scheme is asking this person to do is very, very challenging and can be very difficult. I think back to the Green Bay game where they run those four verticals, right, in terms of getting it called, getting it diagnosed in terms of who has who and that kind of man-to-man coverage look.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of a combination of both, and I do think that, you know, like when I look at the Atlanta game, I felt like Joe Witt Jr. was a little bit conservative. I loved how he called the L.A. game, and I love shades of the game last night. I think they did a really good job, but the one thing I think is the formula for success for this team and really for any defense in the NFL is first and second down efficiency, and then because I do think on third down, you mentioned Frankie Louvu, Von Miller, Dorrance Armstrong, Kinlaw, Payne, Johnny Newton, they can rush the passer now. And maybe there's not one guy in particular in there that sticks out, but with the pressure packages that Joe Witt has developed, you see what they can do to a team on third down. And then I felt like yesterday they didn't really get into a lot of third and long situations. And when you look at a team, when you look at this defense, they struggle the most when they're in third and medium, right? Because they can't get into the pressure packages they want to get into. They can't blitz the way they want to. It exposes the back end to longer downs, which again leads to explosive plays. So I think that's the thing I would kind of key in on is like, it in terms of shortcomings, it's probably a little bit of both. I think it's getting more consistently better, which makes sense. They're just getting more reps together. Joe Witt's getting more reps calling it. But also I think like to your initial point, stopping the run on first, second down is got to be a bigger priority for them because again, like they are really good when they get that done. You know, talk about the games they were able to win. The Giants are able to stop the run well. Last night against the Chargers, they're able to stop the run relatively well. So I think that's part of the formula for them defensively to be productive and to be effective.
You know, specific to that last night, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but one of the clues is just that Jordan McGee, after playing, you know, some snaps last week, was on the field for one of them. So I am assuming that against what looked like a lot of 11 personnel for Chicago, you know, for those that don't know, one back, one tight end, three receivers, that they were in nickel, you know, more often than they've been. And that was a problem for him last year as to why they weren't a good run-stopping team. Was that part of the problem last night?
You know, to say that it's the personnel decision, I think, is kind of, again, is limited in terms of scope because there's times where the person making the mistake is a defensive tackle, and there's a time where the person's mistake is a linebacker. You know, there's a play where two DBs are fitting outside a puller. Like, everyone kind of took turns making plays, and it's kind of funny to watch the film because you're like, if you were to watch Javon Kinlaw, just as an example, because we were talking about it earlier, you're like, man, he's playing really well, but here's a play where he's maybe out of his gap or maybe he's too high on his rush, and it leads to a big play. But on the whole, it's a productive game for him. And I think it's just interesting to me when you watch defense and how one person can make a mistake one play and it leads to a 10-yard gain. A different person can make a mistake the next play and it leads to a 10-yard gain. And so I think that's where it's like finding that level of consistent play from the whole group where it's not individuals, it's the group playing well together. That's something that has to come to the forefront. And that's why I think to me, like the consistency element is so, so important for this group moving forward.
What percentage of takeaways is random versus created?
Oh my gosh, I love this question because it's something that I don't know if there's a really good answer to. But to me, it's one of those statistics when you look at it year on year, there's an incredible amount of variance. You know, one year a team's leading the league, then the next year they're 22nd or whatever. And so I do think that you can kind of tip the deck in your favor to lead to turnovers when you can create consistent pressure, when you can create tight coverage, and you can force hurried throws and inaccurate decisions from the quarterback. I think that's where you can kind of tip the deck in your favor. So when you look at teams that have high pressure rates, usually there's some correlation to turnovers. Now, it's not one-to-one, obviously, because the number one pressure team isn't always the number one team with interceptions, but usually they're a really good defense. So that's where I'd say, like, when you look at the games where they've been productive in terms of turning the football over, it's games where they've been able to apply a certain amount of pressure. Again, the LA game is one that comes to mind as my case study in this example. So I think that's going to be something that, again, is it going to lead to turnovers? No, but does it tip the deck in your favor? Yes, and I think even last night you saw shades of that. I think you see a good pressure package from Joe Witt Jr., and you get some free rushers on the quarterback, and Caleb Williams threw a potential interception to Frankie Louvu. He threw a potential interception to Mike Sanders still. And obviously those aren't actualized, but I think it just shows you the importance of that pressure disguise element in terms of creating those turnovers. And again, you've got to actualize them by catching the football. But I do think that shows some of the variance that you're talking about. You kind of create some of your own luck, but again, it's still a luck-based statistic.
Yeah, it is. I mean, ironically, Joe Witt Jr., Dan Quinn, and Dallas had multiple years in a row of being way up there in takeaways. They also had Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, and I don't think there are players necessarily at that level on this defense. By the way, isn't tackling a part of it, too, when you're a good tackling team, a physical tackling team, maybe, you know, a gang tackle defense that can lead to more opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously people think of like the collision leading to turnovers, and I think that's definitely part of it. But to me, if you're a consistent, well-coached, well-versed in terms of tackling football team, again, it makes you more efficient on first and second down. And if you're more efficient on first and second down, I get into more third down, more second and long situations, more obvious passing downs, where I can ramp that pressure up, where I can be more aggressive with my pressure philosophy. And again, like to me, it's not one-to-one, but I do think the tackling element is huge in that regard. And really, like over the course of a game, like you might give up a bunch of first downs, but as a defense, you're playing for that third down opportunity where you can shift the tide and kind of win that situational football battle.
All right. Offensively last night, yes, you said it from the beginning. Anybody could literally not watch the game, pick up the box score and see -3 in the turnover margin, and that's essentially a 95% tell on who won the game and who lost the game. So we recognize that the three turnovers were critical in the game. Ironically, if they don't turn it over that last time, they probably win the game 24-22. I want to talk about the last turnover in particular, because Jaden said, he said it was a lack of focus. You know, you were there, the rain was coming down, the ball was wet. I made an observation over the summer and maybe even after the Giant game, and I said, the one thing that this guy's great at everything, I don't want him to be too casual. You know, and he's very laid back. He's never, you know, he's never, I don't want, urgent's the wrong word. He's never frazzled at all, even when they're down 13-0. But I do sense occasionally there's a little bit of a casual element to his game. I'm wondering, A, if you've noticed that, and B, if that's the kind of thing that contributes to a turnover like that last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I think I actually like that he's not super wound up. You know, I've played with quarterbacks
that are
really wound up, and it kind of stresses everybody out. So I kind of like that feature of him. I do think there are moments, like with any player, where it's just I don't know if it's a focus thing. It's just like you're not as locked in as you can be. You know what I mean? So I guess it is a focus thing to a certain extent. And there are times where I feel that from him, but I feel it from every player. Like I remember playing, the best player that I ever played with was Trent Williams, and there'd be times where he'd be like, you know, I'd come to the sideline, he's like, man, I gave up a pressure, and I'm like, well, what happened? He's like, I just wasn't locked in. And it's like, what do you mean you weren't locked in? It's 3rd and 10, like, you should have been locked in. He's like, yeah, I wasn't as focused as I needed to be. And so I think there's an element of that for every player, and there are times I think you feel that a little bit from him, but again, that's not an indictment of him, it's just the constant struggle of being a professional athlete, or being a high-level professional in any aspect of life, right, is maintaining a razor sharp focus all the time, because the razor dulls over the course of, you know, uses and time. And so it's like, I think these are great learning moments for players like him and other players, you know, in terms of concentration drops or pressures like we just talked about, or missed tackles like we can talk about in the case of Kwon, where you just got to kind of focus up and say, hey, I'm going to learn from this, it's not going to happen again, and move forward.
You know, what's in my mind when I say that is, over the last several years, when you watch Mahomes, there have been games in which you've watched Mahomes and you've said, my God, he's bored. That's why he's just trying to create some kind of, you know, crazy play. He wants some sort of, you know, he's not hitting the read, the guy that's open. He wants something dramatic to happen here. And I don't want Jaden to go down that path, because, you know, first of all, it puts him at risk. And secondly, it puts the play at risk, even though he's totally capable of improvising and being great. But anyway, that first pick, what did you see there?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is I was in the, you know, Fletch was legend of the game, so he had to be down the field. So I was up in the booth for the first quarter, or first half, and then went down to the field after that. But in the moment, I thought it was the right decision from where I was sitting in the booth. But obviously, when you watch the film, you see kind of how clouded the picture gets. And again, like I've said this in a couple of different spots, one of the things that sticks out to me in the moment, I like how aggressive he's being. You know, it's cover three. You've got kind of three vertical concept there. I don't know if Zach's supposed to push across the field. It looked like he kind of maybe stopped his route a little early. But someone's holding the safety. Someone's holding the corner. You're working Deebo Samuel, your best player, on a hook defender, right? And so I like in the red zone the aggressive mentality. I think that's the right way to look at that. Again, you know, like I coach high school football. If I'm talking to the quarterback, I say that's where the ball should go. I like how aggressive you're being here, but let's learn from this mistake moving forward. We can check the football down to the back in the future if it's a little cloudy or it doesn't distribute the way we think. But on paper, I think that's where the ball should go. And in real time, I had the same thought. Again, once you get to the film, you see how cloudy the window actually is from the end zone view. But I like that element of him, and I like that he owned it afterwards. I like that he came out and said, you know, hey, I missed the opportunity. I was a little bit too aggressive, and it's something I can learn from, because ultimately – that's what you want him to. That's exactly what you want from the quarterback. You want him to know where that line is, where he can reach, where he can stress, where he can really press, and where he has to pull back and be a little bit more conservative.
You don't think so? You're not saying that the aggression was there. So I thought he was just late getting to it. I've seen him make that throw. I've seen him make that aggressive throw and fit it in there. I thought he was late. Was that not what it was?
I mean, maybe a little late. I mean, it's. You know, you kind of like he maybe saw it a little bit late. But I think, again, I think that's where the ball should be going. Is he late? Did he put enough velocity on it? I think they kind of go hand in hand there in terms of, okay. You know, if he's really early, he's okay. If the ball's got a little more juice on it, maybe he's okay. And also, I got to say this, too. I think it's a really good play by the hook defender, Brisker. I think he did a great job getting depth, not being kind of pulled in by the eye candy of the flare to the offensive left there. So, yeah, maybe it took late. Maybe he could have put a little bit better ball out there. But again, like, it's to me, it's a learning process for him, and I'm glad that he was so reticent and willing to take that in that moment.
Have you noticed that the RPOs in this league are just getting flagged for ineligible downfield so often? There's such an emphasis on it. You know, the difference between college is 3 yards down the field in college, 1 yard in the NFL. I don't think he could have, on that RPO throw to McCaffrey, been any quicker out of the decision to throw it. And somehow, Wiley was downfield. It almost seems like, watching a lot of these games, they are really trying to almost legislate the RPO out of the game.
Yeah, I don't know if they're trying to legislate the RPO out of the game. I think it really correlates more for the NFL to the style of run you're going to use. And so what I mean by that is, you know, when you're running an outside zone, as an example, it's really easy for guys to chip and then get up to the next level. So if you're running an RPO off an outside zone, like, you run the risk, especially from the pistol, you run a risk that, like, by the time the ball is getting there, guys are already moving to the second level of the block, right? And so we've seen, I think, back to the Tampa Bay game last year, where they're running a little bit more kind of gap scheme concept, where guys can really sink on double, sit, and drive out. And again, like, I think he completes a post, like a glance to Terry in that game, and there's not even anybody past the first yard of line of scrimmage just yet, you know? So I do think it's maybe kind of changing the way – you call that run associated with it. Because before, yeah, you could do all sorts of crazy stuff. You could do, you know, like the outside zone. You could do pin pull stuff, getting guys to the perimeter, and guys could be way downfield, you know, and it didn't really matter. But obviously now they're kind of cracking down on that. And I do think there's other runs you can get to that are maybe more friendly to the RPO. And there's also coaching points. I remember when I was in Houston and we were basically killing the league with like this this RPO setup. And Laramie Tunsil was actually the left tackle. And there was a game where they called him multiple times. And that week in practice, they just said, hey, man, on this, when you hear this word call and you're uncovered, I need you to take a 1-1000 count before you go to the linebacker. So a little bit of it's also just changing the coaching parameter, too, on the type on RPOs specifically. And so I think it's style of run. I think it's the coaching points. I think all that stuff can be cleaned up. But I do think the league is being much more fastidious with how they're legislating that.
Yeah, you know, at the college level, it's almost unstoppable if there's a talent advantage.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I mean, it's and it creates, you know, the Big 12, you know, 64 to 58 games because, you know, they ride out that mesh for like, you know, 2 seconds to suck everybody up. And then it's like somebody's just wide open. Why do you think the zone reads didn't work last night?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the way the Giants played them, obviously,
the Bears,
in terms of
yeah.
box counts. Yeah, said Giants. Yeah, Bears, thank you. In terms of box counts. And so what I mean by that is they played like to 12 personnel. They basically played like an 8-man box. So think of 8-man box. You got your four defensive linemen, your three linebackers, then some type of safety rotation week. And so that does a couple things. One is it makes the angles to the double teams a little bit more challenging. And two, it lets that overhang player kind of play both. I can now play run away because I have depth, time, and vision to the back. And also I can play out if the quarterback keeps it. And the other thing they were doing quite a bit of, which I think was a smart move by them, is they were running a lot of they'd blitz kind of the edge defender, then stunt the line two away from the tight end. And so you got a bunch of single blocks weak and covered up these linebackers who could now play with vision to the football because everything was kind of naturally funneling back to them based on the line stunt. So I think it was two-pronged. One, defensive front structure, 8-man box, big deal. And then obviously the line stunts they were running on first, second down really kind of made it easy for them to get to the defense, get to that zone read element of the offense.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely noticed a lot of 8-man boxes, especially when they, you know, had Trent Scott in the game, et cetera. Back to defense. Just it's an over, you know, arching kind of question about, you know, your experience as a player and a coach. When you are an offensive coordinator and the other team doesn't have a game-wrecking defensive, you know, front seven player, you know, a T.J. Watt, a Miles Garrett, or it doesn't have, you know, a true cover corner that's like you got to avoid, you know, a Pat Surtain, name your, you know, corner. How much easier is that to game plan for when a team doesn't have either?
I mean, it's so much easier. You know, like, think about it. Like, if, you know, you spend so many times banking reps with your day one, day two, day three, day four, day five installs, and you just rep them and rep them and rep them. And when you don't have a player that needs to augment those installs to account for him, you've got thousands of hours of banked reps, banked looks, and you can just go run it. Like, if I'm, you know, as a player, for example, if I had to go block DeMarcus Ware, like, we had to develop new blocking schemes to account for him. We developed a new run to block DeMarcus Ware, you know what I mean, because of how good and how effective he was against the run when I was here with Kyle Shanahan. And then in high school, when you're coaching, like, you can just call your base stuff until you get that game-wrecking player, and then you have to think about every single time you're calling a play, where is that guy going to line up, and how is that matchup going to affect this play? For example, you mentioned the J.J. Watt thing, like, you had, like, or Aaron Donald's maybe a more prescient example. Like, we would spend our third down blitz meeting talking about our protection rules, which were totally geared around that player. So we couldn't use our banked reps anymore. We had to use that week's repetitions to kind of say, this is how we're targeting, this is how we're going to release, this is the chip help we're going to provide from the back if there's no free rusher on Aaron Donald, who's an interior pass rusher. Like, it's a lot, man. It does a lot in terms when you have that game-wrecking presence in terms of making the other team account for that skill set.
For this team right now, and I won't mention like names of people maybe they were interested in, but if you could go back to the offseason and add either a great pass rusher, a great corner, or a great second receiver that's also like a number one? Which of those three would you have added?
I mean, to me, I think right now the league's going in the direction. It depends on how great this player is. You know, like, obviously, like the Micah Parsons addition, just as like an example.
Yeah.
I know that happened later, but like, I would do that in 2 seconds.
Maybe here are the examples. I'll give you names. Trey Hendrickson, T. Higgins, or I don't have a corner that was available, but a really top flight corner.
Yeah, I mean, I think... in that example, because I know the trade capital associated with what Cincinnati Bengals for axing, I'd probably go with the receiver, I think, in that situation.
Yeah.
Just because I think for cost, for what it would do for Jaden, especially given the current receiver depth, like, again, like, it's I got to give Jaden his props. I know we talked about the fumble quite a bit. Like, watching the All-22 and watching him elevate this offense and elevate this, this group of skill position players is really tremendous. And Cliff's doing a great job also, but... he, you know, everyone talks about the Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels comparison. Like, I see Jaden elevating an offense, and I see Caleb being kind of guided by the offense in a way.
Yeah.
So, like, he deserves a ton of credit. But I imagine what he could be is if in this second group of players who are all playing well and playing definitely above their skill set, there was just more talent here, you know. And I bring this up as a player who was a second, third string player, and I made this analogy before, but I'll make it again. Is like if the offense is built around Jordan Reed running choice routes and he gets hurt and all of a sudden Logan Paulson has to run those choice routes, Logan Paulson is an NFL player. He played for 10 years, but that's not what you want him doing, and I kind of feel like that's where the offense is at the moment. And so it's kind of like now having more skill there, I think, would just help him be even greater than he already is.
I mentioned it in the open to the show that I think going back and thinking about – you know, the two turnovers, the last one in particular, devastating to the outcome of the game. There's no doubt about it. The defense could have stepped up and, you know, helped him out, bailed him out for once, given how many times he bailed them out last year. But the idea that they're, you know, essentially moving on every drive, they're scoring on a lot of drives, he's playing at a super high level. I mean, I think I would have, you know, if he doesn't fumble, if he doesn't butcher that last handoff, he's a B+, A- in the game. He's B+, worst case, in the game. And, he, you know, there was all these questions over the summer with the Terry contract. Like, I'm like, you know what? He's going to elevate everything around him. And I think we've seen the last 2 weeks. That's true. It would be better with Terry healthy. It'd be better with Noah Brown healthy. It'd be better with Sam Cosmi healthy. But they're capable offensively of winning and being good enough to win games as long as he's out there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it just it speaks to, I mean, A, how good he was last year, and the fact that he's even in the same ballpark as that is still really impressive. And again, like, I agree with you. Like, if he doesn't turn the football over the end there, I think you're talking about, wow, like, what a fantastic performance from Jaden Daniels. The third down efficiency, the decisions to scramble, the touchdowns. Again, Cliff deserves a lot of credit for some of those, too, in terms of scheming them up. But it just he's a special talent. And again, like, it just feels... it feels unfair in a way that the one mistake, and again, like, you know, you've covered a lot of sports, Kevin, you know how this is. Like, the one mistake is going to define his performance from this game, and people forget how good he was in all other facets. But that's the nature of sports, right? It's the most impactful play you make last, and in this game, it was the fumble that swung the game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the issue with it is it's probably one of those things that is a little bit controllable. I know the ball's wet, but he said it, lack of focus, and you gotta be prepared for that. Last one for you, because you talked about Cliff and the scheming up of certain things. Why does that play that Luke McCaffrey was wide open on, the fake bubble screen, and then the receiver slips out and is, why does that seem to work every single time at every level of football?
It's the best play in football. One of the best plays in football, I will say, outside of like run plays, which I adore, but it's just one of those things that just messes with like your primal instincts as a defender. And I think the way Cliff set that up was absolutely perfect in terms of like you put Deebo Samuel at the focus of that play. You say, we've run a bunch of bubble screens with him. Luke's been blocking these bubble screens. He's going to kind of work up like he's blocking. Everybody's eyes go to Deebo, and he's wide open. So I do think the play design itself is one of those fun ones that kind of seemingly works all the time. But also I think that the other element there is that Debo has earned that respect from defenses. And even though he wasn't super productive in the game, you see his impact in terms of how defenses treat a talent like Debo Samuel.
Thanks for doing this, as always. We'll talk again soon. They need to get this one Sunday in Dallas, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's always a pleasure, Kevin.
Logan Paulson, everybody. He's so good. Does a great job with everything that he is involved in. All right, when we come back, there is an interesting number through six games of this season as it relates to Washington's offense that I want you to know. I will share that with you. I will share that with you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I was looking at something when I was going back and looking at the game yesterday that I wanted to share with everybody, because it seemed to me in watching the game that Jaden was under pressure a lot, that he was facing more blitz pressure than he had faced at any point this year. So the latter is correct. He faced the highest blitz percentage against the Bears that he has faced all year. And in fact, it was at over 41%. 41% of the dropbacks were blitz pressured by the Chicago Bears. You know, what does that speak to? Well, it speaks to the fact, because they hadn't done it a lot in their first four games, it speaks to they really weren't concerned with covering what was behind the blitz pressure. For them, it was about getting to a quarterback that maybe they deemed to be less mobile with the brace coming off the injury. I don't know. But a lot of it has to be about, hey, we're not really concerned about what you have, which makes the results, 19 of 26 in the game for 211 yards. He had some pretty impressive advanced passing numbers in the game. The pressure rate on him, just so you know, the blitz percentage was the highest he's faced all year at over 41%. The pressure rate, though, and this tells you how great Green Bay was in that Thursday night game, was the second highest, next to the Packer game, which, by the way, had the lowest blitz percentage against him this year. The blitz percentage against the Packers was 22.6%. So they were a four-man rush pretty much that entire night. 41.7% was the percent time that he got blitzed on Monday night against the Bears. But the pressure rate was better with the Packers with their four-man rush, not by a lot, but by a bit in terms of their pressure rate than the Bears' pressure rate. He was under duress on Monday night and with extra man pressures, and I don't think they did a good job. The fact that he was only sacked three times, and I think one of them was a scramble back to the line of scrimmage, is exceptional. He had big-time scrambles as well, had an 18-yarder, had a 15-yarder in the game, rushed for 52 yards. By the way, of the rushing yards, 51 of them were scrambled rushing yards. He only had 1 yard in total in, design/option runs. Next gen, they should break it out. Designed and option runs are completely different. A designed run is a quarterback draw or a quarterback power or a quarterback counter, you know, which they run some of that stuff. But the option runs are different. That's when he's got the option on the zone read to pull it and keep it or to give it. They're two totally different runs. A zone read is not a designed run. It's an option run. Next gen doesn't separate between those. But the other night, almost all of his yards were scramble yards in the game. And by the way, it was his number one scramble yardage game of the season. 51 of the 52 yards were via scramble. But he saw second highest pressure rate and the highest blitz rate of the season in any of the four games that he's played in. You know, keep in mind, he has played against better teams, flat out better teams, with the exception of Atlanta in his games. Chargers, Packers, the Bears, he missed the Falcons game. Played against a Giant defense who was pretty good. The Giant defense was pretty good, and we've seen that since. Now, the other number that I wanted to give to you is that Washington now leads the league in opponent blitz percentage at 37.1%. So the Bears' percentage was high on Monday night, but they are now the league leader in seeing opponents send at least one extra pass rusher. Second in the league, the Philadelphia Eagles with Jalen Hurts. Why is that? Well, they don't really feel super threatened by being exposed on the back end. That, you know, when you get after a quarterback, you've got to feel comfortable, zone coverage or man coverage, that you can hold up or that you can get there. You know, you've got to be able to get there as well. The overall pressure rate, Washington, you know, is actually pretty good. So the offensive line is held up under that blitz, highest blitz percentage. In terms of quarterback pressure rate for the season, they're 20th in the league. So not bad. The team that's gotten pressured the most in terms of quarterback pressure rate is the Jets. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with quarterback holding onto the football too long. But yeah, Washington right now has seen more blitz than any team in the league, percentage-wise, in dropbacks through six games. I think that's interesting. You know, I would guess, and I don't have these numbers, that behind it, it's mostly zone coverage. You cannot blitz this guy and play man coverage behind it because he will turn it into a big play with his legs. And I forget those long scrambles he had the other night, if it was zone coverage or man coverage. I'd have to go back and look. But there should be, you know, opportunities against the blitz to make him pay. And they have. They have in his three starts. You know, they made him pay. They made him pay the other night with the touchdown pass to Chris Moore. Was a six-man pass rush. And they picked it up. By the way, McNichols did a phenomenal job on that play. But I thought that was interesting to see that they are being blitzed at a rate higher than any team in the NFL through their six games. And, you know, if I go back to the Mariota games, I'd have to look that up. But Jaden's, you know, the overall percentage is 37.1%. Second in the league, the Eagles at 35.3%. So that's a pretty big disparity. But Jaden's 41.7% blitz rate was the highest for a game that he has started this year. The Packers game, very low. They didn't need to blitz that night. They just manhandled the line of scrimmage, if you recall. They're going to see more of that considering the success that the Bears did have. They picked it up on that Chris Moore touchdown, but on 3rd and 10 at the Bears 39, when they could have iced the game in that situation, they did not pick it up, and Jaden essentially had to throw it away. And, you know, let's see how Cliff adjusts to that. Let's see if Cosme ends up being an addition that helps. Let's see if Terry getting back ends up being a big difference maker from that standpoint. The raw numbers, passing numbers, last 2 weeks for Jaden are fine. You know, Jaden's playing, you know, at a high level at quarterback here in his last two starts. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's been excellent. But, you know, with the defense being what it is, especially on Monday night, it's going to have to be flawless, and flawless means you can't turn the ball over, period. I thought that was interesting. I would not have guessed. I knew they blitzed them a lot on Monday night. I didn't know what the numbers were until I looked them up, but I would not have guessed Washington was the most blitzed team in the league in terms of percentage of dropbacks. All right, I want you to start thinking about the following question. I want you to describe this team right now after six games. This is a fair snapshot now to kind of evaluate the team. Doesn't mean things won't change. Doesn't mean things won't get better with the additions coming off injuries. Doesn't mean things can't get worse. But describe the team in your own words. I don't want a dissertation. You know, three or four sentences about what you see with this team through six games. We're no longer in the super small sample size. We're not at the midway point of the season either. I'll give you my description when we come back. Max will give you his, and then we'll open it up for calls. We'll open up the phone lines right now. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Describe this team after six games. You can do it, by the way, saying good offense, bad defense, or you can say not a playoff team, or still a playoff contender, or reliant on getting healthy. Whatever it is, describe our team now that we've got more than a super small sample size. We've got six games. Six very different games, and only four of them with the starting quarterback, to be fair. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I do want to tell you about Window Nation and their current offer. Buy two, get two free with nothing owed for two full years. So if you want new windows, go to windownation.com, mention my name. They'll come out and give you a free estimate. Doesn't charge you anything. You'll get it in an hour or less. You'll get it when it's convenient for you. You'll find out which windows actually need to be replaced. And then if you decide to move forward with Window Nation, you get two free windows with every two purchased and nothing owed for two full years. They are number one in America per Forbes when it comes to window installation companies. They've installed over 3 million windows. They can help you out. They can get you ready for winter and make sure that those cold, annoying drafts, because you've got older windows, are keeping your home cooler than it should be. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.